From the sports desk of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal and RedRaiders.com, here's your look at all things Texas Tech sports. Now, here's the Red Raider Podcast.
Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome to another weekly edition of the Red Raiders Podcast, brought to you by the Avalanche Journal Sports Department. I'm Don Williams, Texas Tech beat writer, joined as always by Carlos Silva Jr., AJ Media Sports Editor, and coming to you midweek, as usual, between a 34-18 Texas Tech loss to TCU and a 3 p.m. game between Texas Tech and Baylor Saturday at Jones AT&T Stadium. First trip to Lubbock for the Bears since 2008. RG3 was the quarterback for Baylor the last time they were in Lubbock, Carlos, and this week it'll be Charlie Brewer. You talked earlier and with Shehan Jeyaraja from Texas Football, getting his views on, to kind of break down the Bears and get his views on Texas Tech as well. That'll be coming up later in this podcast. But right now, I want to go back to last Saturday down in Fort Worth. Again, Texas Tech losing 34-18. Josh, the Red Raiders to 2-5 this season, 1-5 in the Big 12. And Carlos, it wouldn't be a Texas Tech football game without moaning and groaning about what they could have done differently.
Well, it's funny because normally you could say that for any football game, but it just seems like it's really, really, I don't know what the term is, but ramped up this year, because it seems like Matt Wells has found himself, and you kind of wrote a column about it earlier this week, but just based on the way things have happened, he's kind of been put in these situations where it's like darned if you do and darned if you don't, to try and keep this podcast PG. But I know there are a couple calls that we'll talk about going into it, but I think that the one thing that you can take away from this contest is that, once again, the offense just has not been consistent, has not been able to find the deep ball. Yeah, they did a couple of times, and I think that's what is a little bit frustrating to some people, that they've been watching this Texas Tech football team. Columbia can't throw the deep ball. You've seen some of these younger wide receivers step up, like a Jalen Polk, adjust to the ball. Eric Ezekonoma shown that he was consistent last year and is showing that he can be a big play threat. And I think, at least from your perspective, now that you're on the road, I know that's been kind of the running joke for us. You finally got back on the road, so you're able to kind of watch him on the road. But I think, at least from my perspective, that the one thing that really kind of stood out to me when I was on the road covering them, I'm sure it stood out to you, they just couldn't get going on offense early, and that really hurt them.
Yeah, and it's kind of a tale of two, halves for Texas Tech. Offensively, first half, you have the five sacks and you do virtually nothing, with the exception of that one drive late in the first half.
Yeah.
And then in the second half, you're actually able to take and hit some deep shots. You know, 60-yard touchdown pass to Jalen Polk, 57-yard pass to Eric Ezekonoma, through another ball that Ezekonoma just lets go right through his hands. Mm-hmm. Could have been about a 50-yard pass play late in the game. Didn't come up with that one. But a couple of – I guess the issue for me from that standpoint is what was the reason for those – for that kind of disparity? I mean, first half, pass protection is – I thought the pass protection was not very good, giving up five sacks, but I also thought there were times where Henry Columbia, I remember one sack in particular, he had – I mean, he had a lot of time in the pocket – and winds up getting sacked from the front side, where he's got to get the ball out. And so it was offensive line not protecting very well. I didn't think he saw it very well in the first half. And I'm sure there's probably, as is often the case with Texas Tech when they face TCU, receivers difficulty getting open. And then that changed in the second half. And again, no sacks in the second half, and you hit some deep balls and moved the football. But Carlos, is, and because we've said this before, game is close late. It magnifies the decisions that get made.
Yep.
And then that gives people license to reason to complain when things don't work out. And there are two calls, one in each half this past Saturday, the decision not to kick a field goal in the first half and the decision to kick a field goal in the second half. Both go up in flames and wind up costing you in this game. So we'll go first half, fourth and two, mm-hmm, at the 7-yard line.
So again, you could have gotten a first down if you get it.
I was going to say, game situation there, TCU 10-0 late first half. And again, it's 4th-and-2 from the 7. I'll give you my opinion in a moment. You give me yours. You kick the field goal there, you go for it.
Well, here's the thing. At this point, I'm just going to kind of lay the foundation here, and obviously you can kind of do your own deal, but you have a kicker in Trey Wolf who hasn't been as good as he was last year. I know that's been the knock on him, and I know you brought that up, like, I want to say preseason, even spring practice. It's like, how do you get better? And the one thing that has always been said by Mark Tomerdahl is you still have to earn your spot. It doesn't matter how good you were last year. You got to prove yourself this year. And so far, Trey Wolf really hasn't. I mean, he did have that one field goal clearly, but I would like to think that maybe at some point that a change would have been made. Obviously we have that answer now since Jonathan Garibay is going to be starting this weekend when I asked Mac Wells about that. But going back to the game, I think it's a really tough situation because you obviously want to show that you have some confidence in your offense. It's very rare that they've gotten into the red zone and obviously created some points so far this year. I think if I'm calling that shot, I would say, yes, you have to go for it on that play, only because, again, this is how I'm thinking. You don't have confidence in the kicker at this point. Yes, you can probably bring in another kicker if you'd like Jonathan Garibay. But I think at that point in time of that game, you need to make a statement. If you get a first down, that keeps the TCU defense on the field a little bit longer, and I think you have a little bit more of a chance to get yourself a touchdown if you're able to get that first down. Now, granted, obviously getting the first down is a little difficult when you have 2 yards, but I think you've got the playmakers in the backfield now because you had multiple guys come back. I mean, you mentioned it when you were tweeting. You had Xavier White back. TJ Vasher was back. You had, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Dalton Rigdon was back in the game as well. So you had multiple playmakers that could have found an open space. Yes, there's a little bit less because of where they were on the field, but I think you have enough. Even with Henry Columbia and his running ability, I think they could have gotten the first down. It's just a matter of maybe it's a different play call. And at that point, X's and O's, I'm not going to go into that discussion, but I do agree with the call for making a long story short.
And for me, it's real simple. I would have gone fourth there, and I said so when it's 4th-and-2. You got to go here. Here's the reason why. The previous 5 possessions, your offense had done nothing. Here was Texas Tech's first 5 possessions that game. 3 plays for minus 20 yards, 3 plays for minus 9 yards, 3 plays for 3 yards, 3 plays for 5 yards, 3 plays for minus 5 yards, and none of those possessions lasted 2 minutes. The drive where you had 4th-and-2 at the 7, that was actually a 12-play, 64-yard drive. That was the first time your offense had done anything in that game. And I thought to accept the field goal there would have been a psychological defeat, moral or psychological win for TCU, just get off the field without giving up the touchdown. So to me, it was worth the gamble there. Not to keep the field goal, to go for it, the throw incomplete, get no points out of it, but I still say in that situation, regardless of what happened later in the game, you had to go for the touchdown there because it looked like you were never going to get me. It looked like you were never going to get to the red zone again, let alone to the end zone. So when you had no chances at that point in the game, you needed to go for it there. Now we flash forward to the call that everyone's talking about. It's late fourth quarter, TCU leading 27-18. Mm-hmm. 2:44 left.
Yep.
Tech with a drive that's where they've actually moved the ball effectively again.
Yep.
And then Matt Wells surprises everybody by on 2nd-and-4 with the ball at 19. Sends out Trey Wolf to kick the field goal, pulls the offense off the field. Field goal misses. Now, he explained his and I appreciate this about Matt Wells. He explained in detail why he went for the field goal at that point. That was, okay, they went for 2 earlier to make it 27-18. He said at that point then, we're playing to need a touchdown and a field goal to win the game. And clearly it didn't matter to him which came first. And he said that once they were inside the range that Trey Wolf felt comfortable, which at that point was the 25-yard line, i.e. a 42-yard field goal or shorter, then they were going to kick the field goal. So they reached that point, got to the 19, and that was his rationale for kicking the field goal. I would not have kicked there. And really, to me, it's not so much about Trey Wolf's relative success or lack thereof this season. It is about your offense is moving well at that point.
Yes.
I would have run another play, another two plays. I'd have gone ahead and I think played out the series, which is to say, don't kick the field goal until it's fourth down. I'll run at least two more plays. Now, take out all three timeouts left, so they could have preserved clock, but that was the one I kind of agree with most people. That's not what I would have done.
I agree with you on that, and I think the thing that's really kind of bugging people is the fact that it was on second down. But again, I mean, all the metrics and stuff that he talks about do support his decision. I think the end result is what is really just kind of sticking with people, because yes, you can obviously say what you do, and no matter what he does, he's going to be questioned. If they make the field goal, obviously people are going to be okay. Well, he did it on second down, but at least they made the field goal. I think the biggest thing to kind of take away from this, Don, is just there's been an inconsistency at the offense, whether they've been able to sustain drives, which, if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that was their longest offensive possession of the fourth quarter up until Henry Columbia was actually intercepted at the end of that contest. I think.
That's right. You're right.
I think the previous one was like six or so plays or something like that. But I agree with you. I think the offense was rolling. Well, I guess perspective is a little bit. The offense was moving the football at that point, and I think that's something that you sometimes have to kind of look at and say, well, if this is working, let's keep doing it, kind of like what you said, up until we have one more down or one less down to have to worry about it, whether that's on third or fourth down. Again, maybe second down, if there's less time, maybe people can kind of look at it. But I would just say that you have to kind of look at the situation and say, you need touchdowns at this point, because the offense is not showing the ability to make more than a field goal so far this year. And I think that's really what it comes down to for me, is that they need to score touchdowns and they have to somehow find confidence to be able to do that. They were able to do that when they threw the ball far. Yes, Jalen Polk had to make an adjustment. Eric Azakonda had to make an adjustment, but at least you have to put yourself in that situation. And I think that's the biggest thing for me watching this team throughout this season, is that, yes, you wrote in your column that they've been putting these positions to where Matt Wells has to make these decisions and everyone will second guess. But I think there are some certain times where you just have to make a decision before this gets to a dire strait, so to speak. Maybe you try and make the long pass or something a little bit more, something like that. But I think that's really what it comes down to for me, is that the offense just has not been very consistent throughout this whole season.
Which is why you find yourself in the position you're at in right now. 2-5, 1-5 in the Big 12 in this season is going to have a hard time getting 500 from the mere fact that you have to go play Oklahoma State, which is a ranked team right now. Tech favored by over Baylor by 1.5 this Saturday, and will be favored against Kansas when Kansas comes here.
Yeah, the reason that they're favored against Baylor, though, they did lose Terrell Bernard, who was their leading tackler. Craig Williams, a really good running back, if I'm not mistaken, their leading rusher, and we can kind of get into that. But I think certainly to your point, and I think that this is something – but before we kind of switch over, this is something I wanted to ask you. But I know you kind of mentioned the record right now. Say Texas Tech goes and does not win against Oklahoma State, does not win against Baylor, but they – get a victory over Kansas. They have a good win. And again, I don't know what the situation is, but as you well know, anyone can go to a bowl game this year because of the current situation. Say they go to a bowl. Is that something that you want to look at future-wise? Or I guess what I'm saying is, what would you say is the future prospects of Matt Wells following a season where everyone felt like there was promise going into it?
You asking what's going to happen at the end of the season if they? Well, I don't think Matt Wells is going anywhere after this season. I think Tech's hands are tied at this point. For the main reason being, if you decide you're going to fire Matt Wells, then you would be paying three Texas Tech head football coaches. Tech paid Cliff Kingsbury $2 million last January. They owe him another $2 million payment this coming January. If they fire Matt Wells, they owe him $9 million to leave. And if they, and then you would have to hire a new head coach and coaching staff, in addition to paying some of your assistants in the interim. So you'd be paying an enormous amount of money. I remember I did the story last year. Getting rid of Cliff cost Tech somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 million. And that was a little over $4 million to him and additional money to, you know, a dozen or so coaches on Cliff's staff. And at this point, you're talking about an athletic department that's financially strapped. You had the budget's down at least $25 million, and it wouldn't surprise me if it decreases more than that as we continue on through the school year with COVID-19 still affecting things. You've already had 40 positions cut from the athletic department. 20 of those were active positions, people actively working that were laid off. So you have it's bad optics to be laying off people and yet spending $9 million to fire a football coach after two seasons. And I know people online will say, yeah, but Tech's donors have said they can raise the money to pay off Matt Wells. Well, Kirby Hokut's still the athletic director. It's still Kirby Hokut's choice, not the donor's call. And so I don't think anything's going to happen at the end of the season. Can I see staff changes? Yeah, I can see staff changes, possibly an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator, anything. I mean, they got rid of both defensive backs coaches after last off season. Right. I think you could see some more turnover within the staff. But at this point, I think particularly in this economic climate, I think it's unlikely that there's going to be change at the top.
Well, with that in mind, obviously they've got that same coaching staff going against Baylor this week. For you, as I alluded to already, Terrell Bernard not there for Baylor. He's out for the season along with Craig Williams, but they do have a very fabulous quarterback in Charlie Brewer, but he hasn't played to expectations, I guess would probably be the best way to put that, Don, or maybe he has.
Well, I think the big thing with the Bears just to me is that they lost so much talent off of last season. Now, most of that –
And their coach.
Most of that was on the defensive side, but he also lost a terrific receiver, and the Mims kid, who was a high draft pick, and
their head coach.
Coaching change, scheme change, which Keith Patterson alluded to this week. Tech DC said, you know, you look at Baylor on film, they're doing different stuff offensively. So a couple coaching change, scheme change, I think that's affected probably the biggest effect on their offense. And then the biggest effect on defense is just they lost a ton of talent off a great defense last year. Now you flip it around, and Texas Tech, I think part of the intrigue this week is, well, how much personnel do you get back? Because last week at TCU, you know, you're without Eli Howard, without Tony Bradford, without Nick McCann. And, of course, you already had Nelson and Bansor out from early in the season. So, really, that's four of your top six or so defensive linemen gone. And so they wound up playing that game, a lot of that game. They wound up playing with a defense that's basically a third down package. Two down linemen, four linebackers, you know, with Jacob Morgan-Stern and Brandon Randall. On the edges, you know, standing up on the edges. And interestingly enough, for a lot of that game, it worked. They for about two and a half quarters, they defensively played pretty well, particularly in the defending the run with two down defensive linemen and four backers. and really for the most part played well, except that, you know, the two long runs that
Max dug in,
you know, 48 yards and 81 yards. So this week, will they get back any of those defensive front men, or will they be compromised to the point where they just have to play a defense that gets your best front seven, front six guys that you have on the field? Now, I kind of think Nick McCann will be back this week, help you out, give you at least one more body.
I know you brought up Gilbert Ebenemy. Is he a possibility there?
I think he's kind of a stopgap at this point. I think he'd probably take another injury to get him onto the field because he has missed so much time over the last year and a half that I don't think they want to play him. I don't think they want to play him yet. But keep in mind, though, and, you know, I guess I'm a little bit surprised that there hasn't been much discussion among Tech fans of the COVID cases. Looks like Tech had so many early, and that got a lot of discussion. And then the past 3-4 weeks, people have seemed to not really pay much attention to it. But, you know, there was a couple of weeks ago where they had 3 COVID positives. So those are 3 players that were down. And I think last week they had 0 positive tests, but still had an active case or two.
They had another positive test.
Mm-hmm. So there's at least one football player that's not going to be there on Saturday.
And potential guys
through contract tracing who are sitting out. So there'll be at least one guy who won't be playing this week, maybe more. But that'll be another situation to monitor on Saturday afternoon.
So kind of talking about some of what Baylor has had to deal with, not only with the coaching change, scheme change, and all the other things, I think people forget Baylor was out for a little bit due to quarantine because of all this earlier.
Oh, a lot, yeah.
You know, I think people forget that. And I know the other thing, too, you brought it up. Last time they were here in Lubbock, RG3 was playing, so certainly it's been a while that they've kind of been on the road, so to speak, because this has always been at AT&T Stadium. They're going to have to deal with that road travel, if you will. So I don't know if that's going to change anything, but I think that's really the biggest thing is just consistency. Is can Texas Tech, it seems like we've talked about this before, get off to a quick start, which they did against Oklahoma, but all of a sudden you kind of let all these small little fumbles or just small little adversity just snowball. And can you find a way to get rid of that? And I think that's going to be my big key, Don, is can you get off to a fast start, and can you not allow the adversity to really snowball for you going into this home game?
Yeah.
For you,
I don't know if it's so much fast start, which would be good, but it's just some offensive consistency from series to series, moving the football. I mean, again, you had 5-3 announced to start this week, and you had, let me look here, 5, 6, 7, 8. 9.
I can't remember the last time they've had a drive of more than two minutes, frankly, Don.
They had 11 three-play series last week. Now, 2 of those were touchdown series, so there were 9 three and outs. I mean, that's simply unworkable. You can't have 9 three and outs and expect to win a football game. So,
yeah, especially when your defense is depleted, too.
Yeah, that too. I think that's kind of, again, look at Texas Tech and Baylor. That's 3 p.m. Saturday afternoon at Jones AT&T Stadium, Fox Sports 1 with the telecast. And I think that'll pretty much covers what I want to talk about. Shall we move on to you get your conversation with Shayon J. Raja?
I think so. I think everyone's kind of tired of listening to me, so hopefully So hopefully he can talk a little bit over me. Obviously people will find out, but appreciate anyone that sends us out tweets or comments or questions on the social media. I send it out a little bit late, obviously today when we're recording it was early signing day. So probably not the best day to do it for you and me, cause we were pretty busy today, but Texas Tech men's basketball signed Jalen Tyson, probably their only signee going into this year, the next year, a 4-star guard forward. Some people call him a wing. From John Paul II High School, really good player. led his team to a program first state title in taps. So he's going to be a good player. I know Beard talked about him feeling like he could be a really good NBA point guard type prospect because of his length and athleticism. But granted, I'm sure you already know, just kind of covering them a couple times, Don, if you got a guy that's rangy, athletic, has long arms or long wingspan, he's going to work pretty well in this defense where Texas Tech looks to really kind of turn the ball over on you because they're really blocking out all the passing lanes and getting deflections and starting their offense off their defense. So I think,
yeah, another one of those six, I mean, one of those 6'6 guys, kind of like
6'6 to 6'8. If you got a guy there, I'm pretty sure Chris Beard and company have probably looked at the kid.
Yeah.
So
it'll be interesting to see him when he does get here, which will be not this year, obviously, but next fall.
Yeah, and then, of course, Texas Tech men's basketball. I can't remember if we talked about it last week, but November 25th, their first game, they're hosting Northwestern State. So season's almost here, Don, along with Thanksgiving.
That'll be fun. 2 weeks from today, huh? 2 weeks
sure
from
today. Sure is.
Yeah. So, all righty. We will, I guess, put a wrap on it for this time. And again, coming up next, Carlos talked earlier to Shayon Jayaraja from Texas Football about a little more of a Baylor breakdown and his views, an outsider's perspective on Texas Tech. So that will be coming up next. And for now, I'm Don Williams for Carlos Silva Jr. You've listened to the early segment of the Red Raiders podcast brought to you by Lubbock Avalanche Journal. We'll talk to you again soon.
And welcome back, everyone, to the second portion of the Red Raider podcast. I'm Carlos Silva. In the second portion, as you all know, we talk to an opponent, or we talk about the opponent, pardon me, and to do that, because we're talking about the Baylor Bears, we got Shayon, darn it. And for those that don't know, just to do some behind the scenes, I was practicing that name about five times before this. And again, just to prove to everyone, I don't do it just to everyone. I'm a terrible pronunciation person. So I apologize, Shayon. But I appreciate you coming on. Of course, you're from Dave Campbell's Texas Football. You cover colleges all around Texas. So you've been doing stuff on my UTEP Miners. But of course, I don't have you here to talk about good old Hardison or anyone else on that team. You're actually talking about the old Texas Tech Red Raiders who are now, if I had to, I guess, just to kind of put or at least kind of break the ice here with this conversation, at the beginning of the year, maybe before COVID and kind of all this stuff kind of happened, if I told you both of these teams would be coming in with a combined 2 victories with both of them coming into this game, what would you have said?
I probably, if you had said that, I would have assumed that both Big 12 wins would have been on the Baylor side. I don't think that – I obviously we knew that there was going to be a first-year head coach in Waco and Dave Aranda. And honestly, I was relatively optimistic about what Texas Tech could probably be too. So, look, there's a lot of context in both situations. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard not to see both of what's happened this year for both these teams. It's a disappointment so far.
In terms of Texas Tech, I guess, what have you seen from them just early on? I know everyone seemed to think Alan Bowman was going to be kind of the guy that he was when he was healthy. Unfortunately, didn't seem like things started very well for him. Again, the injury bug bit him, and then all of a sudden, Henry Columbia came in to kind of maybe spark the offense. He did for a little bit, and now it seems like he's on some hard times right now.
Yeah, the thing that's been most surprising to me about where Texas Tech is at is I just have been a little surprised with how poorly their tackles have played. You know, obviously last year this was a real strength for them with Travis Bruffy and Terrence Steele, and they just haven't really found those guys to step into those roles. And even though the interior of the line is obviously very talented, you know, we had multiple of those guys on our preseason All-Texas College team, it just hasn't stepped up, you know, and I know that it's easy to kind of say, well, this quarterback does this, this running back does this, but it's like, if that front line isn't coming together, it's really kind of hard to do anything. And the thing that I like that Columbia's done for the most part is I think he's just, and this is no shot at Alan Bowman, but I think he's just a little bit of a gamer. You know, he's somebody who, when things break down, he just handles that pressure a little better. Whereas, you know, Bowman wants to stand in the pocket and deal, and that's a great quarterback, but it's not something that's worked. And I mean, look, it's hard to say, obviously, at this point, when it comes to that offense, whether it's personnel, whether it's scheme. I mean, there's just a lot of things going on, obviously, but I think it's fair to say, especially on that offensive side, it hasn't worked.
In terms of Texas Tech, I guess, what were your expectations going in, especially like you said, you had a couple guys on your all's team. Of course, you cover stuff for Dave Campbell, so you cover all the Texas teams. I guess in terms of where Texas Tech was, are they a little bit lower than what you expected? Are they about where you thought they were? Or do you kind of feel like, I know a lot of fans don't like to hear this, but do you kind of feel with all the exterior, outside COVID-19 precautions and kind of all those things that this year is just kind of one of those where you just kind of say, okay, let's just try and figure out what happens next year?
Yeah, I think for me, what I saw from them early in the year is about what I expected. You know, a team that's still very much growing and I think, you know, is still heading in the right direction, but, you know, one that was feisty, but maybe not quite good enough to get over the hump consistently, right? But I think these last two games have been very disappointing to me. You know, a game against Oklahoma, that's something that happens, right? I think Oklahoma is really starting to figure it out. But to go against TCU and to really have all the trouble in the world moving the ball, you know, I think that has to be disappointing, you know? And obviously, I do think that the defense has played better than people realize and are giving them credit for. But, you know, to give up, what, 3-4 of those Max Duggan draw plays and not really have a counter any single time, you know, it feels like that was the moment that things have started to slide in the wrong direction. And the season isn't over, right? Like, the thing that you say is that, you know, Baylor's not very good this year. Kansas is still on the schedule. You know, that there's opportunities for that feistiness to come back. And if you do end up with a, you know, a 4-6 record, if you're able to beat Baylor and Kansas, there's plenty of time to still feel pretty good about year two, I think, under Matt Wells. But that's the big thing, I think, that's kind of gotten away from me, is I did want them to continue to be feisty. And I feel like that started to slip a little bit.
It's funny you mentioned this. We're talking with Shehan Jayaraja from DCTF Magazine. He covers all things college football, especially in Texas. We're talking Texas Tech Baylor, who play this weekend at Jones AT&T Stadium. When you look at, and of course we'll get to Baylor in a little bit, but I just wanted your perspective just so we can kind of get a fresher eyes compared to what most people normally hear from me, Don, or some of the other local media affiliates around here. But just from what you've seen from Texas Tech offensively, is there anything that really makes you kind of scratch your head, or is it more, you, like you said, you're seeing some improvements, but maybe not as quick as you'd like to see?
I think that the thing that's been a little surprising to me has been kind of that lack of identity. You know, I think that with David Yost coming in, I know that it's easy to forget now because everybody's kind of upset, but like when Matt Wells came, that was the first question everybody asked, are we getting David Yost? Right. And so, you know, to this point, I think that it's been really tough because I think last year he did a good job of trying to work with some of the limitations that he had. And this year, obviously, and the tackle play obviously plays a part in that, but it's not clear what he wants to do with this offense. You know, does he want to be, you know, does he want to run tempo like they've talked about so much? Does he want to, you know, run downfield routes? It seems like they've gotten away from that. It really seems like, you know, at times they're going to these sideline routes and trying to get these wide receivers in space. Sometimes they're running the ball. A lot of the time they're not. And, you know, it just feels like they don't know what they can do well. And maybe the answer is nothing. I mean, maybe the answer is nothing, but it feels like they haven't committed enough to anything to try and figure that out. And I think that for me, that's been the most surprising thing, because you talk about David Yost as a guy who has so much leaned into his identity as a spread offensive coordinator. And obviously, you know, having a physical running game has been a big part of the game. And it feels like, you know, even though you have some of the guys back there at Texas Tech, I think that they haven't committed to it the way that they need to.
Switching now to Baylor, I know we've talked a lot about Texas Tech, but Baylor showed a little bit of an identity, I thought, at least early on in the season, with some really good defense. And then all of a sudden you lose Mr. Terrell Bernard, and all of a sudden things kind of change. You lose your leading tackler on the defensive side. I guess what can you kind of see from Baylor that makes you feel like, okay, we can kind of figure things out without one of our best guys? And then of course you had Craig Williams find out that he will be out for the season as well.
Well, I think for me, I expected there to be some, you know, a step back, I guess, on defense, because they lost 9 starters from last year's team, and both players who came back, you know, Bernard and obviously Raleigh Tejada, are fantastic players, some of the best players in Texas, but it's still two starters, right? But really, the defense, I think, has played pretty well to this point, all things considered. You know, even playing against some of the better opponents, they haven't let teams kind of get away. They've had lapses. They haven't been as good as they were last year by any means. But the defense has kind of played their part. It's really been the offense that's been a huge issue for them. You know, some of it has to do with the fact that early in the season, especially, the offensive line was decimated by the contact tracing protocols. And, and obviously, Baylor was a team that had to shut down earlier in the season because of COVID issues, right? And so, you know, I think that that mixed with, you know, you've got a couple of guys in there on the offensive staff who have never coached with each other before. And I think some of those miscommunications are coming through on the field. And look, I think that it's fair to say that whether it's fit, whether it's calls, whether it's, I don't know what exactly you want to say it is, Charlie Brewer's taken a huge step back this year. You know, the last couple of years, he's really been kind of a gamer, never spectacular necessarily, but he's been a guy who's been a consistent source of offense for them, and that's been gone. And I think that, you know, you're really starting to see that, you know, if this team isn't going to be able to move the ball, I don't know who they can beat on their schedule. And like you mentioned, you did see last week against Iowa State, them start to get some protection, start to get a consistent five guys on the line. And it just changes the game, obviously, completely when they can do that. Now we're going to have to see if they can do it in successive weeks and also, obviously, whether they can finish a game.
Matt Wells talks about consistency a lot. I know Baylor had shown a little bit, but at least from what really stood out to me last week while I was watching that game, and maybe you have a better perspective on this than I do, but which is the Baylor team that you've seen more, the team that was ahead 24-10 against Iowa State or the team that lost 38-31 to Iowa State last week?
Yeah, definitely the team that lost 38-31, especially in the last couple of weeks. You know, obviously, I think that West Virginia game, that's that second Big 12 game of the year, ended up kind of being a turning point where, you know, it just felt like after that, they really struggled to gain some offensive momentum. They really struggled to figure out what they wanted their identity to be. And again, I think that they did really both of the last 2 weeks, you know, the second half against TCU and obviously against Iowa State, they showed what they could be. They showed what, you know, if this thing is working, this is what it could look like. But yeah, I mean, the offense that we've seen the first couple weeks of the year that really struggled to get the ball moving, that really struggled to finish games, that really struggled, you know, to be consistent, like you mentioned, Matt Wells likes to say, that's really been the offense that we've seen. And, you know, it's kind of like Texas Tech, where a lot of their plays have kind of been chunk plays that aren't necessarily representative of sustained drives consistently enough.
So, not to put on your prediction hat or anything right now, but if you're watching this game, which I'm sure you will, because I see you tweet about it a lot, especially UTEP and Texas Tech and all the other Texas teams around here. But if you're watching this game and you see Baylor doing something or Texas Tech doing something, what's going to make you feel like, okay, Texas Tech is in a good position to win or Baylor is in a good position to win?
Well, I think honestly, I think that both of these teams, it's going to be pretty similar. I think it's going to be which team has better play up front on the offensive line. I think that, you know, Texas Tech last week, I think actually did some pretty nice things in terms of still kind of getting after the quarterback in the passing game. And again, I really feel like the defense has not gotten enough credit for what it's been able to do. You know, I was talking to some Tech fans and, you know, a lot of them were like, why is the secondary struggling? I feel like they've played pretty well, all things considered. But, you know, the deal is, right, if they're not able to get to Charlie Brewer, if they're not able to make him get rid of the ball quickly, then, you know, if Charlie Brewer has time, he can do some things, right? And the same thing I'll say the other way. If Baylor can't get to Henry Columbia or to Alan Bowman, whoever ends up back there, I think that it's going to be really tough for Baylor to be able to maintain for a couple seconds. Because like you mentioned, I mean, Terrell Bernard was a guy who was an All-American type at linebacker. I actually think that he projects pretty favorably to Jordan Brooks last year for Texas Tech's defense, just in terms of the role that he played and his versatility. And so if Texas Tech is able to have the time to attack up the middle, if they have the time to, you know, hit some this short passing game, I think that they're in really good shape. And I think that, you know, either team, whichever one can control that better, will win the football game.
Once again, that's Shehan Jayaraja. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
I'm awesome. That's being a gamer right there, you know, being correct on that last one. Once again, that's Shehan Jayaraja. He worked for Dave Campbell's Texas Football. We appreciate you jumping on here to chat a little bit about Texas Tech Baylor, which of course is at 3 p.m. Saturday at Jones AT&T Stadium. You can follow him at his Twitter account, which is at Shehan, which is S-H-E H-A-N, Jayaraja, J-E-Y-A-R-A-J-A-H. Appreciate everything you do for Texas football. Of course, I talked to you as well for high school football. That's coming up this weekend as well, Shehan. So stay busy. Appreciate you jumping on, and we'll talk to you another time, my man.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Once again, that's another edition of the Red Raider podcast. I'm Carlos Silva for Shehan and Don. We'll talk to you next week.